Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod, a storied American company in a fire sale, Paramount's drama taking a spin with upstart Skydance. But how does this movie end? Puck's Matt Bellany.
I still think the Skydance merger happens. The Skydance people are getting frustrated by this process. They don't like the leaks to the media. They think it's become kind of a circus.
Actor turned tech entrepreneur Edward Norton. Why he founded Zek to make his meetings more bearable.
Nobody's dream of their life was to be a great builder of slide presentations. Like, it's the bane of everybody's existence.
Plus, the rest of today's stories that got us squawking. The Fed sits down. A return to office mandate now? And the hills and valleys of Trump media.
Remember when he tweeted as president what that meant?
Do you remember what happened to the value of Twitter during that period? Nothing.
It's Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Breaking overnight, protesters at Columbia stormed and occupied the university's Hamilton Hall building early this morning. They broke windows and barricaded the entrance with chairs and tables. That coming hours after college leaders began suspending students who refused to leave an encampment on campus by a 2 p.m. deadline that came and went yesterday afternoon. So this story continuing apace, and we will see what Columbia tries to do. Meanwhile, these things are happening not necessarily at this level, but all over, increasingly at more campuses even yesterday.
Yep, like South Florida. If you're watching, it could be any university at this point. I'm not surprised to see what's happening. Crazy how everyone comes to these conclusions at the same time at every university. Very strange. Paramount CEO Bob Bakish is stepping down. Merger negotiations with Skydance Media continue. He'll be replaced with what the company called an office of the CEO. CBS President George Cheeks, Showtime MTV studio head CEO Chris McCarthy, and Paramount Pictures chief Brian Robbins. Meanwhile, the company reported earnings of 62 cents. Beating estimates of 36 cents, but revenue fell short.
And some news about our parent company. The Wall Street Journal reports that NBC Universal is prepared to pay an average of about $2.5 billion a year to air a package of NBA games. Warner's TNT has been paying an average of $1.2 billion a year under its current deal, but it failed to reach a new agreement with the NBA before an exclusive negotiating window expired last week. Separately, subscription prices for the Peacock streaming service are going up. They're going to increase by $2 this summer ahead of the Olympics in Paris. The ad-supported option will cost $7.99 a month, and the ad-free offering will cost $13.99.
Meantime, Macy's sending an ultimatum to corporate employees. Come to the office. You ready for this? Come to the office 2 days a week, or you could face termination, according to Bloomberg. Company telling hybrid employees yesterday via email all of this, that the policy will go into effect, if the policy didn't begin, exist already, on May 13th. It's given workers a three-month grace period to move back to the New York City area. If they haven't returned by then, they could face consequences, including termination.
I mean, this is what Bruce Ratner said yesterday, just about the occupancy levels in New York City.
But even
you'd have a 11 or 12% occupancy. Now it's 25.
But even if you get him to two days, it's still, it doesn't, the math's never gonna make sense.
We want to get right over to our senior economics reporter, Steve Leisman, who joins us right now with the results of the latest Fed survey. Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Becky. Yeah, the outlook in the survey turning more hawkish, with respondents delaying the bulk of the rate cuts they'd expected this year into next year amid a forecast for higher growth and higher inflation in 2024. Only one cut now fully priced in for this year, and that's in December. Compared to June in the prior survey, with multiple cuts in the prior survey, the group is split over the possibility of a September cut. It's like 48-48. The 29 respondents do see a 22% chance of a hike in the next year, a 3.8% funds rate in 2025. So there's still cuts in the cycle here, but now next year and a bit less than had been forecast. 3.3% is the average neutral rate for the group, up from 3.1. What does that mean? It means the Fed isn't as tight as previously believed. Well, you can see that in the numbers. Peter Buchvar from Bleakley Financial Group, he writes in, I think the bond market now has it right that maybe we're going to get one cut this year with a slight possibility of two. That fully reflects the view of the respondents. There is the possibility that we get an announcement on quantitative tightening on Wednesday from Fed Chair Powell or from the Fed, the process of the Fed reducing its balance sheet to tighten financial conditions. Here's the outlook of the group on this particular topic. They don't expect the Fed to announce or begin the taper until August, but January 2025 is the time when they think the Fed's going to stop, and they think they're going to take another $700 billion off the balance sheet and $600 billion, which would include $600 billion, off of bank reserves down to $2.9 trillion. So still stopping at a pretty high level there, but taking a lot off of where they were. They were near $9 trillion on the balance sheet. Survey respondents actually somewhat more hawkish than the futures market, in part reflecting the forecast for better growth and for higher inflation this year. That comes with a growing belief, guys, that the economy may have to slow and unemployment may have to rise for the Fed to hit that 2% target. That's the debate right now, Becky.
Steve, it seems like the messaging has been very clear from anybody who's been talking, who's either a former Fed official lately or from somebody who's maybe on the Fed who's still speaking at this point. It sounds like we are headed in that general direction, and the message seems to be coming through to the markets to some extent.
Yeah, I think the market's got it. I think the market and the Fed are reasonably closely aligned. Remember, we sort of began this whole process, say, go back to December when the Fed was less dovish than the market was. The market thought these six rate cuts. But the data has come in. It kind of tells you that the reaction function, which is how does the market think the Fed is going to react to incoming data, even if the Fed doesn't talk? It's pretty well attuned here. Now, there's a debate, and one of my colleagues on .com is working on a piece about whether the Fed talks too much. They may talk a lot, and maybe my issue is maybe they react too much, but we're not seeing a big gap or gulf here between where the Fed thinks things are going and the market or the market's read of the data. It's come in. It has not shown progress. The market has backed off cuts. That makes sense. Have they backed off too much? I don't hear Fed officials, Becky, talking about more cuts than the market is talking about. In fact, I'm interested to see this survey, which I'll be writing up later this morning, is a bit more hawkish than the futures market. And these guys, they've been wrong about a lot of things like stocks, things like that. They're pretty good on gaming out the Fed.
Okay. Steve, thanks. See you later.
Shares of Trump Media, they have been rising since the low of 2280 hit back, if you remember, on April 16th. The stock closing 12% higher yesterday at $46.69 without any obvious catalyst. The company's been campaigning against short sellers, informing shareholders how to make it difficult to loan their shares to short sellers. University of Florida business professor Jay Ritter saying that the strategy may have decreased the number of shares available to short. He's telling CNBC that it's possible some short squeeze is occurring, in which short sellers, of course, forced to repurchase Trump shares to replace the stock that they had borrowed to sell short. But without that explanation, there really is none.
No, probably not. Probably not realistic to say that it reflects poll numbers, although I could make more ridiculous assertions, probably. If he's president, it's going to be worth a lot if he were to become president.
I'm not agreeing with you.
We'll see. Something's that might be totally technical. Well, I mean, we don't disagree. You don't know why it's worth anything.
Well, no, but he's on Truth Social now, and nobody's looking at what he's saying.
Well, you'll need to pay attention if he's not tweeting. Remember when he tweeted as president, what that meant?
And do you remember what happened to the value of Twitter during that period? Nothing. Nothing. Well, that's the whole point.
Twitter was,
when he was on Twitter, everybody said, how is it possible that Twitter cannot possibly monetize
right.
the Trump phenomenon?
Twitter, who knows with Twitter and what's it worth now? You know, even though it's probably more popular than ever, I don't know how it finally monetizes. And,
but that's why I think this becomes.
I don't know how it was worth 70. I don't know how it's whether it's worth 22. But I do know that the fortunes have definitely gone. It's doubled in the last couple of weeks.
And a programming note for you: this Saturday is the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. Warren Buffett will take the stage in Omaha to answer shareholder questions for 5 hours. And you could see it all right here on CNBC. You can also watch it streaming on CNBC.com. The day is going to kick off at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. Mike Santoli and I will be there along with 40,000 other people. And we'll, of course, we'll be joined by Berkshire board members, managers and shareholders. Also have a few surprise guests for you. You will have full access to the main event, Buffett on stage. And at his side will be Berkshire Vice Chairs Greg Abel and Ajit Jain. You can tune in Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time on CNBC and CNBC.com.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, a drama straight out of the movies. Paramount CEO Bob Bakish out. His replacement could fast-track the next iteration of the company, whether it's a merger with Suitor Skydance or something else entirely. Puck founding partner and media journalist Matthew Bellany.
Now they have an office of the CEO with two television leaders and one film leader who get along very well, and they believe they can work together, and they say that they're going to put together a plan to run this company.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
This is Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. Here's Mike. Q.
Welcome back to Squawk Box on CNBC. I'm Joe Kerner along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Bob Bakish is out as head of Paramount Global, the company replacing the CEO with a trio of division chiefs. This news comes as Paramount is in talks with Skydance Media about a possible merger. And joining us right now on all of this is Puck's Matt Bellany. Okay, Matt, what happens? Play it out for us.
Very big development. This was a surprise. It developed over the weekend. Bob Bakish was dismissed. Technically, he stepped down. And there's a couple scenarios here. I mean, one is that this is just clearing an internal impediment to the Skydance merger, which Sherry Redstone, the controlling shareholder, really does want to make happen. If it doesn't happen, there is a separate potential offer on the table from Apollo, which Bakish tended to favor because that one benefited Paramount Global shareholders in general, not primarily Sherry Redstone. So there's one scenario where this is all just a placeholder until the merger or a deal can take place. The second is none of these deals work out, and they've got to figure out how to manage this company. Now they have an office of the CEO with two television leaders and one film leader who get along very well, and they believe they can work together, and they say that they're going to put together a plan to run this company.
We were talking about that earlier, the three of us on set together. Joe, Andrew, and I worked very well together. And then we were talking about how insane that would be to have the three of us all trying to...
Doing anything important.
to call the shots on this stuff.
It's one thing for these guys to have a text message chain that they're all on and they communicate all the time. It's quite another to direct the strategy of, even within its diminished state, is a pretty significant entity with lots of different arms and different agendas. You know, Brian Robbins is relatively new in this role as the head of the film studio. George Cheeks and Chris McCarthy are veteran television executives, but they've never been in this top role before. You know, it'll be interesting. They did present to the board this past weekend, and apparently the board liked what they heard, but it's going to be really tough. We'll see what happens if they can't make any of these sale deals happen.
Look, this is the controlling shareholder, Sherry Redstone. You knew what you were getting in for when you bought into this company, that there was a super voter who was going to be in charge of things. I don't think that means that the shareholder lawsuits will drop away easily. What happens?
No, I mean, we do know that the Sherry Redstone camp is pretty confident that if there are shareholder lawsuits, that this merger with Skydance would survive them. But clearly Skydance is cognizant of them because it recently upped the offer and added $3 billion to the mix, which they hope will both improve the balance sheet and also sweeten the deal for some of these Class B shareholders. We'll see if that's enough to make them feel okay with this. The special committee at Paramount is evaluating this, and obviously they've had some issues there too, where several board members have stepped down from this committee during this process. We don't exactly know why, but that's usually not a positive sign.
Matt, just final thought, your best guess as to whether this deal goes through or something else gets pushed?
You know, I still think the Skydance merger happens. You know, David Ellison's father, Larry, is one of the richest men in the world. And I think if his son wants this to happen, he can make it happen. But I do know that the Skydance people are getting frustrated by this process. They don't like the leaks to the media. They think it's become kind of a circus. And you know, the deadline is May 3rd. And if there's no extension here, we could see resolution on this happening or not happening by the end of the week.
Okay. Matt, thank you. Matt Bellany.
Cheese will be next.
Up next on Squawk Pod, actor and now entrepreneur Edward Norton is turning the boardroom tables with his new tech platform, Zek.
My partner in this literally said to me, he said, remember the scene in Fight Club where you punch yourself in the face? He said, I literally just came back from a board meeting and I'm pretty sure that the CEO walked out and punched himself in the face.
2024 board meetings. Oh, there's got to be a better way.
How can we be doing this really important corporate function on old fixed slide files? It's ridiculous.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
Our next guest is actor, filmmaker, and investor who is bringing the art of the pitch in Hollywood to the boardroom. Joining us right now is Edward Norton. He's the co-founder of board presentation software startup Zek. They have cleared a $7.5 million Series A funding round. It's led by Salesforce Ventures plus Coastal Ventures, Briar Capital, a lot of big names involved in this, and we want to thank Edward for joining us.
Sure.
Good morning.
It's nice. Good to be here. Yeah.
We got a lot to talk about, but let's talk about Zek as in deck before we even get into a lot of other things. But where did you even come up with the idea for this?
I've definitely had a number of people say to me, you have a very interesting day job. Like, why would you get involved in something as down in the weeds as a board governance software platform? And it's a fair question, but I have spent like a lot of my adult life on boards,
right?
On my theater company board here in New York, conservation organizations, housing organizations. I started off in housing finance, and so I'd been on a lot of nonprofit boards. And then increasingly, as my career in business and in investing, you know, I've served on corporate boards as well.
And early investor, we should say, in Uber. You started EDO.
Yeah, I've done.
People may think of you as an actor, but you've been in this business for a long time.
Yeah, and we work with you guys on advertising analytics with EDO, and I, you know, it's funny to say it, but You talked about Uber. When I look at back at ride hail versus taxis, right? I would say that ride hail improved social relations between people and drivers. You know, it took a negative dynamic and made it more positive. We really felt like after years of experience that, you know, boards are supposed to be something that's positive for an organization. There's a governance function, right. But certainly companies in the early stage, they have the board notionally for support and wisdom and acceleration and guidance and all these kinds of things. And too often that relationship devolves into like the hall monitor relationship, people protecting right. their investment or protecting their donations. And some of it has to do with the fact that both sides of the table sort of dread the experience. And a lot of that we think has to do with the tools. Like, I've had the experience even recently of getting the 90-page PDF like 24 hours before the meeting, grinding through it, you know, right. in an airport, pinch scrolling on it because it's not, I can't read right. it like the New York Times on my phone. Getting into the meeting, and then the CEO reads you back the 90-page right. Bible right. you've just read, verbatim. And you're right. sitting there with your eyes glazed, no one has the, and you sit there thinking, a couple of us thought, you know, this is in 2024, in a world where everything is in cloud-based tools that allow with multifunction dynamism to do all kinds of things, how can we be doing this right. really important corporate function on old fixed slide files? It's ridiculous.
So some of the best ideas come from trying to fix the problem in this case that was yours. Do you see this as something just for boards, or ultimately do you see this as something where people are going to use this to build decks, if you will, for just about anything?
Well, it's funny you say that. We have our internal joke is hashtag death to decks. Like I really do think that companies building presentations in fixed slide tools is really ridiculous.
So Microsoft today. And PowerPoint should watch out here.
Maybe we definitely have had we have a couple a thousand nonprofits and companies using this now. We've gotten effusive, almost emotional, feedback, like gratitude for helping from both people who sit boards and people who are in management, because
how's it different? I've read a lot about this.
Well, for one thing, the way it's built, you know, the idea of a company going pencils down for 10 days before a board meeting is such a terrible waste of time. And we've taken a lot of that setup time using AI and also just interface that makes it so much easier for the company to build its presentation. But we've also really challenged the idea that you shouldn't be able to you should be able to expect that your board has read something, and you should not have a board meeting be rearward looking so much as forward looking. And we've done a lot to kind of try to we say the quantitative in terms of time that it takes for everybody to get ready, but then the qualitative, you want the qualitative component of the meeting to be more productive. And so it reads like you would read the New York Times right. on your phone. One of the most important things is to be able, if I'm reading it and I have a question, I want to be able to query in the platform, and I want to be able to get answered before the meeting. And I want to be able, and if I'm the management, if I send it to you and I walk right. into the meeting and I don't know if you read it, then I'm blind, okay. you know? So the management can actually see how much time everybody has spent in what sections of it, which,
The team that always puts these decks together, there's always a whole group of people who are basically staying up all night for, you know, days on end to try to get the board all the stuff.
Yes.
Right. Does this make that part any easier?
Much easier. Much, much easier. I always say nobody's dream of their life was to be a great builder of slide presentations. Like, right. it's the bane of everybody's existence. And at one point, my partner in this literally said to me, he said, remember the scene in Fight Club where you punch yourself in the face? He said, I literally just came back from a board meeting, and I'm pretty sure that the CEO walked out and punched himself in the face. Right. He's like, because it just went, terribly.
So we're trying. Who should watch out, though? I said before, I mean, I don't know if you think this ultimately takes over from a Microsoft PowerPoint, or if you think of, you know, Prezio, which has tried to, you know, make a dent in this space,
yeah.
or Keynote, which is, you know, what Apple's product is.
Those are what I would call more general note-making tools and organizational tools. We really focus, I mean, let's look at it this way. If you talk about three pillars of the corporate experience, like legal,
right.
cap table management, and board governance, right? We took legal and cap table management into the cloud, right? Carta, No company does Excel spreadsheets in a law firm anymore. They use Carta or something like that. Nobody sends you a FedEx full of documents with little signature tabs on them. You get it in DocuSign. But we have not taken the board experience and the governance process. And one of the things we built in is that, why should you spend an hour in a board meeting voting on minutes approvals and stock option packages? You can do that from the airport terminal in a pre-approved voting mechanism. Right. So there's a lot of governance functions that should not require a bunch of very busy, talented people to sit at a table and say, on a Zoom call. It's ridiculous. So there was a lot we felt that, and the basic, those basic functions. We have, to your point, had a lot of the management teams already start using it both for financing pitch, as a financing pitch site, as a data room, and also for investor updates and things like that. It is better for those things as well.
Before we let you go, we've been talking about streaming a lot this morning, about the future of Paramount, for example. Mm-hmm. And we talked about Peacock, given that they may be getting the NBA rights with NBC. You've said that you think that Netflix could double its market cap as a function of advertising. I'm curious if I were to ask, maybe it's unfair since you have to do business with all of them.
No, they're all we're Switzerland. EDO, we work with everybody and they love us. So
if you had to invest in one of them, though, what would you do?
That's an interesting question. I guess I'd maybe pass on that question, but I would say that I think that. When people like Bob Iger are saying that ad-supported streaming is going to be a big growth sector of Disney's revenue, people should pay attention. You know what I mean? Like, and as Netflix passes whatever they're at now, 25 or 30 million ad-supported accounts, like to me, and this I think this is a statement that's supportive of all the legacy media companies, because for a long time, they lost market share to companies like Netflix, right? There is no question whatsoever that this is an incredibly significant moment that they can move their content through an always on demand format. They have all the identity data that Facebook and Google have within the streaming construct. So if I'm placing my ad, I'd rather place it with Disney or NBC or Warner Discovery or Netflix in their streaming thing, because they can give me granular targeting in the same way that Google and Facebook can, but with the power of TV. I believe what Iger knows and what Netflix is realizing is that they're going to be able to charge some of the highest KPMs because of the combo of television plus data, right? That is what's going to make, and that's why I've said, and I'm not being facetious, I think that linear TV is kind of toast. I think even what we associate with live TV now, sports and events and news, will be made available through the streaming format, as opposed to, if I was a cable company, I would get ready to be nothing but a broadband delivery company, because nobody, my kids are 8 and 11, right? They cannot even conceive of the idea that they would schedule their lives around a program for anything, not even for sports. Right. And I think we're going to see that television, even ad-supported television, is streaming television. And Netflix will be one of the biggest networks in history. You know?
Well, here we are on linear TV, so hopefully you're
going to be fine. It's just going to not. It's just not going to come through a cable box.
Edward Norton, thank you for coming in this morning.
Appreciate it. Who cares about
good
the
luck
pipes?
With tech.
It's the content. The content, not the pipes. Mike Shiner, Tour de Force.
Oh, thank you.
Don't you think
that literally right there?
Did you really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know where Michael goes
who
out?
Won, is Jared Leto? Is that what happened? Who won that year for best supporting? Was it? Do you remember? You
don't
remember?
No.
It's a sore subject. Never mind.
No, it was J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons
yeah,
the next year.
Great.
That's right. For
Whiplash.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was great, though.
He was. I know.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. And to get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, follow Squawk Pod wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.